So let me tell you another one of my bugaboos, B corporations.
Okay, what's a B corporation?
Well, I would have to go back and study the details, but a B corporation is a corporate structure where you commit to being ethical and environmental. You commit to a whole bunch of increased criteria and legal liability that means you're going to be a highly ethical organization in a variety of ways. And the reality is, this is one of the worst ideas I have ever heard in my life. Because what it says is the solution to the fact that we have a group of people who've just stolen $40 trillion. You know, to me, if you said to me, let's bring transparency to that and figure out how we get our $40 trillion back, I'd say, well, you know something? Now we're going at real problems and real solutions. If you say to me, you know something? These evil people have just stolen $40 trillion. And so our solution is we're going to take the people who just lost $40 trillion and we're going to add more legal liabilities and more requirements for them to be harder working, even more ethical than they are. And my attitude is, you know, let's say we create a B corporation and we load up far more requirements and legal liabilities and everything else in that organization. Well, you know something? That board of directors is still going to do whatever the guys who can kill with impunity tell them to do because they don't want to get killed. They don't want their kids to be killed. So it doesn't matter. You know, what it just does is it makes their life that much harder and that much more expensive. It's nuts. It's completely nuts. And if you look at the people who've been promoting the B corporations, from everything I can tell, the people who just stole $40 trillion are financing them.
Mm. So do we have these B corporations?
Now, I'm not saying that the people promoting them are not good-hearted people, you know, because we have a whole world of good-hearted people being financed by the people who control $40 trillion to come up with what solutions. One of my theories is they just know you have all these people who feel terrible about what's going on, and this is a way to give them a socially satisfying experience or to come up with solutions which are pure fashion and don't mess with the real power lines. You know, it's a way that they can process their grief. They feel like they're doing something positive. It's interesting, when we had our little debate in Petaluma, I said, look, we have people who are running around killing with impunity, who are acting above the law. They're a breakaway civilization. That's our problem. And they said, yes, but we can't solve that. So we want to do something positive. And I said, well, great, but making the financial system more complex and cumbersome, I realize it makes you feel good, you know, but it creates a regulatory burden for the rest of us, and we have enough problems dealing with these psychos over here without you loading on more. And they just looked at me like, well, I know, but we'd much rather pretend that we don't want to think about that. You know, the good-hearted people can get cycled into dead-end solutions that are very, very dangerous. Okay, so yes. Let me tell you the next solution, impact investing. And I won't bore you with all the details of impact investing. But as you know, I'm very interested in having investors look at the total economic return of their activities. Because when you look at the total economic, and you have to estimate it because there's no way to calculate it mathematically, or certainly not with a current analytical infrastructure. But when you look at the total impact of your investments, you see at a much deeper level a lot of opportunities and risks that you would never see. So in 1990s, when I first started to look at sort of the total, what was happening in the economy, and I said, uh-oh, you know, the currencies are going to go through tremendous debasement. How does somebody protect themselves against that? And that's how I found precious metals. I would never have found it otherwise. I was looking at the total economic returns. I wasn't trying to understand how families could protect their wealth. I was trying to figure out how families could protect their lives. Anyway, so I backed into precious metals, and I would never have found it if I hadn't been looking at the whole financial ecosystem. Anyway, so I'm a great believer in looking at that, but in my model, you look at that so that you can do a better job of protecting investors' performance. So you're trying to find opportunities, you're trying to avoid risk, subject to one change, and that is what I say is never, ever invest in anything that has an intentionally negative return, either to investors or to the total economic. So my partners know, don't ever suggest we invest in Monsanto, because my attitude is, why should I finance my own death? I don't finance my own enemy. Monsanto is my enemy. I don't finance them. I don't finance people who are running around and killing you, because that is a violation of the non-violation principle. So that's the one thing. Now, impact investing says, no, take your money and invest to create good. Now, it sounds lovely, right? Not so lovely. The number one problem in America is the good guys are being debased. Their wealth is being drained out the back door in a whole variety of different ways. This is just a new scam to drain more money. Because what they need to do, I go back to, you know, the 20 to 50 families that are keeping that county alive. They don't need to take their assets and invest them to do sort of general good. So think of this from an economic warfare. Let's call the people who just stole $40 trillion Mr. Global.
Okay.
So Mr. Global rapes a place. Okay, so he comes in, he brings in narcotics trafficking, he brings in the lottery, he brings in mortgage fraud, he brings in more taxes. He
prisons.
Comes in, right, prisons, chemtrails, you know. So let's say the total equity in a place is $100 billion in a small county. Okay? So after he's finished doing all these things, now it's only worth $50 billion. Okay? And let's say we have 50 leading families who are the real, you know, great citizens of that place. Okay? And let's say those 50 families before, let's say, $30 billion was owned by big corporations and outside of the community, and $70 billion was owned by the family. Now we've got $35 billion owned by people outside, and we've got $15 billion owned by the families. So the problem is those families have gone from $70 billion to $15 billion. So we have the good guys whose assets that they can employ to really build the economy have shrunk dramatically, because we've centralized them in a way that shrunk the total. Okay, so they've been raped. That's the problem. So the question is, how do we build it back up? Well, the last thing we do is build it back up by saying, okay, Mr. Global raped the place and he stole this amount of money. And now what we're going to do is require you to take the little amount of money you have and invest it to build it up so he can rape it again.
Well, where is this impact investing going?
Well, that's one of the $64,000 questions. But the idea being is we need to use our capital to heal the planet. Now, that could turn into many things, good and bad. But the framework of it is wrong. The framework of it is we don't need to take our personal capital and move it over here to do impact investing. What we need to do is look at the sum total of institutional investment and say, why are investors investing money in things that are doing harm both to them and to the whole economy? So we need to go back to the president of CalPERS. Why is the president of CalPERS telling me that we're going to move all the money out of the country and then turning around and using pension fund assets to buy mortgage-backed securities, which by definition have to default if we're moving all the income abroad? Why is he doing that? Because that's in violation of good sense, fiduciary principles, blah, blah, blah. And my guess is he didn't think he had a choice, because otherwise he'd be shot. Okay? So we need to get back to, you know, the problem is now that we've done that, now that we've used trillions of dollars of our retirement savings to do something which is economically stupid, both for the world and for ourselves, but has given Mr. Global his $40 trillion. Mm-hmm. The question is not how do we take the rest of our capital and do impact investing to kind of fix places in a variety of ways or do solutions, whether they're good or bad. The question is, how do we stop that from happening again? And how do we get that $40 trillion back? Where to go? How do we get it back? And why is it being run this way? So think of the whole system as a milk bucket that's got a hole in the bottom. And Mr. Global's got this big container. And as the milk runs through the hole, you know, he collects up his $40 trillion. Well, I, for one, do not feel like I should put more money in the milk bucket until we talk about why is there a hole there and where's the money going that's draining out of the bottom. Don't tell me there's no milk in the bucket. Of course there's no milk. There's a hole in the bottom.
And what constitutes this bucket that these impact investors are investing in? Anything? Stocks? What are we talking about here?
Well, it's interesting. I just bought one of the new books on quote-unquote impact investing. But my expectation is that you're going to see impact investing. You're going to see a lot of local investment. And you're going to see a lot of investment in things, in technologies that are held out to be real solutions. And not to say that there aren't wonderful things going on inside of that.
Well, this reminds me of what you said to me before we sat down for this talk. And that is that you feared that the new bubble, the new fraud, was going to be in local investment.
Right.
Is this what you're talking about?
One of the most harmful things to the economy over the last 20 years, and part of the Hamilton Securities Community Wizard Squabble, was we were building software tools and doing venture capital that would finance community venture funds. We were financing community venture funds, but we were building software tools that would make it much more economic for a group of local business people to do a community venture fund.
Right.
And one of the most important issues that we need as a society, we need to finance with equity, not debt. Debt turns people against each other, builds non-alignments. Equity is a much more alignment-building form of financing. And I was a great believer we need to finance communities with equity instead of debt, which is how they're financed primarily now. And so we were prototyping community venture funds. We had just written our first check for the first community venture fund.
Now, when you're talking about investing with equity, you're talking about putting actual assets or money into a business, not loaning them money. Is that what you're saying?
Right. Into the ownership interests.
Yes.
Our model, and there's a lot about this that we've done on the Solera report, we did a A Share, B Share model where we divided voting shares from economic shares. So the economic value of the business was in non-voting shares. And this allows you to bring in money from lots of different constituencies and to build alignments without threatening control and giving control. And there are thousands of different examples. So imagine in a community, let's say I and my neighbor are having a fight at the PTA. Our kids have been getting in fights, and we end up in a fight. Well, just because you own stock in the community venture fund, you don't want me to be able to get a hold of my financial statements and use that information to do me harm in this fight. Okay. So the idea of non-voting shares is it allows you to put certain sort of safety walls up that protect privacy and protect certain kinds of control interests. If you're a small business person, you know, you can't afford to give up control. You need control. And if to raise capital, you have to give up control, it's not worth it.
I see.
Okay. So there are all sorts of different issues. If you want to bring in big pension fund money, if you want to bring in corporate partners, you want to be able to give them an economic interest. This is how the Chinese do it. If you and I go to China and we want to invest in a local business, our investment has to be non-voting shares. Okay. So it's a way to separate strategic control and leadership of a business from voting. Now, again, it gets back to this issue. It's all very well and good, but if you have the power to kill with impunity, it doesn't really matter. Anyways, so we were doing these community venture funds, and the key was for the last two decades, we've seen large corporations move in and take over huge parts of local market share because they had access to liquid equity capital and the local businesses didn't. And in fact, there is a way to build up a liquid local equity market that could turn that around and really rebuild small farms, small banks, small businesses in a way that's highly economic and creates a lot of income and employment opportunities locally. It's a great idea. And if you look at the new technologies, particularly fabrication and manufacturing tools, oh boy, they're enormous opportunities. And in fact, you know, I think the people who stole $40 trillion and missed a global know that. It's one of the reasons they just passed the crowdfunding bill. The Jobs Act, and we have a special Solera report on it, what it does is it allows much more flexibility from current SEC regulations about raising small amounts of capital, particularly for small business. So right now, if you come to my county, my neighbor can buy a lottery ticket and lose everything. but they're not allowed to buy liquid securities in a local business because we're trying to protect them against fraud. Well, my attitude is I'd rather see them lose it investing in a local business than in the lottery.
Well, is the Jobs Act law now or not?
The Jobs Act is law, but the SEC has not promulgated the regulation. And the big objection to the promulgation of the regulation and the passage of the law was this is going to be the basis of whole new frauds. And I agree. I think it's going to be the basis of whole new frauds. But I also think we have got to build liquid equity markets for small business. We've got to build micro venture capital. And if that means that, you know, people are going to be not prudent in how they manage their investments, well, to me, crowdfunding will allow them to do it at a local level where there's a lot more intimacy and a lot more understanding. And a lot more understanding of the importance of the quality of leadership. So to me, this is a step we need to take, and we need to figure it out so that it's not fraudulent. But will there be plenty of fraud? I'm sure.
And crowdfunding is a way of describing what the Jobs Act would legalize.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, crowdfunding is legal now for gifting. If you go to websites like Kickstarter, I can go to Kickstarter, see, one of the early projects was a guy was making a documentary on the banjo. He needed another $40,000, so I can gift him $1,000, you know, through Kickstarter, and then it's his money, it's his business. So crowdfunding is happening on a gifting basis. The question is, can it happen on a securities basis? So instead of gifting him $1,000, for $1,000, can I get an equity interest in his company?
What are some of the other challenges that small local businesses face with regard to raising capital? What about liquidity? Now, you have talked about how Mr. Global and transnational corporations, Wall Street, are geniuses at creating liquidity.
Yes.
And, of course, these big businesses that are public issue stock. And so talk about how companies that are public, Wall Street, big companies, are able to raise a lot more capital and how they have access to much more liquidity.
Well, let's come at it this way. If you as an investor have a choice of putting your money in a local business and it's not liquid, who knows when you can get it back? Okay. So let's say you have $10,000 you want to invest. You invest in a local business that a friend's starting. You put in $10,000. Who knows when you get it back? And if your friend is hit by a car, the business is wiped out. You get nothing. If you have a choice of putting your $10,000 in that or putting a $10,000 investment in a publicly traded stock that you can, you know, you can dial into your discount brokerage firm any time of day or night and see the price, which would you rather own?
The public one.
Right. And why is that? Because you can buy and sell it whenever you want.
Exactly.
And you can see a price for it whenever you want. So if there's a problem, the price is going down, you see it. So you have transparency, you have liquidity, but you have something else too. You have a deep bench. If the chairman of that company is in a plane crash, what happens? There are 20 other great guys who want to be chairman. You know, you have a deep bench. You know, if the third baseman breaks his leg on the field, there's a guy to run out, you know, and play that position. You have a deep bench. So you have a deep bench, you have transparency and liquidity. In the local business, you don't have any of those things. Okay, now watch this. Let's just pretend in our imagination that we create a community venture fund for our community, okay? Now we have enough money to invest in the back office. Let's say in our community venture fund, there are 100 small businesses in our community, and we invest in 50 of them, okay? So we have non-voting shares in 50 of the local businesses, and now we put a little logo up on every store or a little farm or community bank that's in the community venture fund. Now, whenever I shop at that store, I know that I'm causing my stock to go up. So if I'm a shareholder, I have a vested interest in shopping there and supporting and giving them information and going in and yelling them if there's something they should be doing, because I make money if they succeed. So I'm building alignment. Now watch this. Now I have the ability to turn around to an entire generation of young people coming out of high school and college and saying, how'd you like to be an intern? You're not going to get stuck at your dad's business. We've got an internship program, and we will allow you to work in a variety of different businesses. Not only that, we'll give you stock option. You don't have to go to Wall Street. You don't have to go to Silicon Valley. We'll give you stock options. And we've got a program with a local community college or the local university so that as you go around to these different businesses, you get all these courses and education that will help you understand, you know, sort of the cross-cutting issues of what makes a business great and what succeeds and what doesn't. Okay? So we now have this apprentice program. And when you're finished with the apprentice program, you know, we have money in the venture fund. If you want to start a new business, we'll bank you if we think it's a good plan. Okay? Suddenly, the kids aren't going to Wall Street. They aren't going to Washington. They're like, hey, let me stay here. There's some real opportunity here. Okay? So now you've got the human capital you need. As people retire, now there's young people coming up who can buy their business because the community venture fund will finance them. Okay, so now this gets even better. Let's say our community venture fund is trading at $10 a share.
So this venture fund is publicly traded?
Or you can set up an exchange, and there are different ways. For example, I'm a member of the Farm Bureau Cooperative in Tennessee, and they have an insurance company. Members are allowed to buy the stock, and their mechanism set up so that we can buy the stock from each other. So you could set it up as a membership and trade among the members. There are different ways you can do it, but you can absolutely create liquidity. Now watch this. What happens if we bring in new energy technology that lowers the costs of all the businesses in the venture fund?
Well, then the price would go up.
Stock goes up.
Yeah.
What happens if the popsicle index in that community goes up?
It becomes a much more desirable place to live.
Right, and the value of the stock goes up.
Yes.
So what happens if we reduce our consumption in that place in a way that reduces the expenses of all the businesses? Again, the energy technology, but it could be other environmental technology like the water cleanup. The value of the stock goes up. So if we heal the environment, if we reduce consumption, if we do all sorts of good things that are good for that place, we make money. And that's all part of aligning living systems with financial systems. Because we've been making money on capital gains from large corporations that are not place-based going in and raping places. And now that the places have been raped, we have an opportunity to make money on healing the places and creating financial systems that align the financial ecosystem with the living system, because living systems are organized by place. They're not place blind. People live in a place. You know, rivers run in a place. Trees grow in a place. You know, the living systems are very place-based. And if we're going to realign the financial system with places, we have to do it one place at a time. And so, you know, I go crazy whenever I hear people say, you know, we have to kill money and we have to kill the financial system because the financial system depends on growth. Well, you can grow capital gains by reducing consumption. All you have to do is finance places with equity. There's no law that says that the stock market requires more consumption. It doesn't. It's just complete baloney. It's hogwash. And it's so simple to see it. I mean, you can do this on the back of the envelope. You don't need to destroy places and destroy living systems to get the stock market up. That's just bunk. But what you need to do is you need to rebalance your equity investment so that you are balanced between functions and places. Because in fact, the more you heal the environment and the less you consume, in many respects, the more the value of your places will go up. And it's a rebalancing.